Emily Harrigan's latest novel, The Glorious Guinness Girls, tells the story of three sisters, Aileen, Maureen and Una Guinness, from their idyllic childhood in their stately home in Ireland while the War of Independence was raging outside, to the exuberance and decadence of London's high society, where debutantes mix with the bright young things of post-war England. And Emily Harrigan joins me now on the line. I had a couple of words written down to describe them, and I was wary about even using them. Brilliant, spoilt and flighty, the Guinness sisters, Emily.
I think that's fair enough.
Well, Maureen, Aileen and Una, they aren't all the same person. How different are they? We're in kind of the 1918 through until 1930 is where we are with the novel.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so at the end of the novel, they are really just, I mean, Una, who is the youngest, is not even 21. She's just married and she's 19. How different are they? They're really quite different. So Aileen, who is the eldest, Maureen is the middle, and Una is the youngest. All of them very beautiful. They were the glorious Guinness girls. They were hugely written about in gossip columns throughout the 1920s because they were incredibly rich, and they were also very beautiful. And they loved parties. They loved going to parties and being written about. But within that, Aileen always strikes me as the most aloof of the three. She was very elegant. She was extremely interested in couture clothes. She was also a reasonably silent person. You know, she was good fun, but she wasn't as madcap as Maureen, the middle one, who, for me, is the most fascinating of the three of them, particularly at that stage in their lives. Maureen did actually go on to become rather monstrous. In her later life, Maureen was the model for the caricature of Dame Edna Average that Barry Humphreys created. So, I mean, that gives you some idea of the person she turned into. Yeah. She was famous for being a snob. She was famous for her obsession with the Queen Mother. She was famous for being rude and putting people down. But in her younger years, she was also, by the way, according to people who knew her, even when she was monstrous, she was very compelling. Magnetic person with an enormous personality. So as a young person, before she became monstrous, I am so interested in her and her kind of energy and her spirit, which were both huge. And then Una, the youngest, the sweetest, she believed that she was her father's favorite, and she may well have been. Some people believed her to be the prettiest, but I think that's kind of a moot point. Very maternal person, very gentle, very sweet, very warm, quite shy, could be quite quiet. And then apparently this quite devastating wit when she did decide to speak.
Give us a real sense there of these very real people, very different personalities. Like any set of siblings, they're not going to be exactly the same. They may have looked alike, but they aren't in personality exactly the same. But the person who brings us through the novel, Emily, is a character called Felicity. Fictional.
Yeah.
Into the midst of an historical novel, and we have the War of Independence as a backdrop, why did you want or why did you need this fictional narrator, Felicity Burke?
So I created Felicity because, as you say, this is a novel. It's a work of historical fiction. So while the skeleton of the novel, the events that happen, are based on the truth of the girls' lives and the period that they lived through, this amazing period of the 20th century. And in fact, those girls spanned the entire 20th century. They were born at the beginning. Aileen was born in 1904. She died in 1999. So they lived through all of the events, the War of Independence, the Civil War, the Roaring Twenties, the Second World War, into the 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond. And so all of this is true. All the circumstances and the detail and the dates of their lives are true. But I needed somebody who was able to look at the lives of these three girls from an outsider perspective. I needed somebody who would be able to see the insane privilege, the incredible wealth, the absurd way that they lived, because they can't see it. They're too much in their own lives. None of us see our own lives, clearly. You know, we just live them. So I wanted somebody who does not come from that kind of wealth at all to be able to come in.
Yes.
Fliss joins the novel when she's 11. So she grows up with the girls. She watches them grow up, because they're all about the same age as her. She watches them grow up and fall in love and all the things that happen to them. And she's able to see these things in a way that they aren't and make comparisons, which I think is vital.
And the other thing that Felicity has is an older brother called Huey, who kind of easygoing guy in at one level. But then there's the stable hand working on in the place as well, called Thomas Dolan, who's very political. And we're talking about Ireland, 1918. So we're just post the Easter Rising, a couple of years past that. We're into the War of Independence and we're into subsequently the Civil War. That political backdrop must have been of huge interest to you. And Felicity and her family and Thomas Dolan allow you to open that up.
Exactly, because the Guinnesses lived through these things, but they weren't really involved in them. I mean, they suffered from what, you know, Elizabeth Bowen describing the Anglo-Irish, she said it's feeling English in Ireland, feeling Irish in England, belonging nobody, nowhere rather. And certainly for the Guinnesses, they slightly floated above all of these historical events. So there is a bit in the book which is taken from a true account of the three of them in 1922, when they're in their early teens, standing and watching the burning of the forecourts in June. So the forecourts is going up in flames because the anti-treaty forces have occupied it and the treaty forces are burning them out, basically. And they were able to see that from their house in Castleknock, Glenmaroon. But they only stood and watched. They didn't participate. Mm. And I wanted somebody in the novel who was more involved, who, you know, was more Irish than they were, who felt the fight in a personal way that they definitely wouldn't have. And that, for me, was Huey.
And indeed, Thomas Dolan is an important part of that as well. And that's the kind of the first half of the novel. The second half of the novel, we find ourselves in London, the London of the Roaring Twenties and debutante society and the bright young things. That was a very interesting place to write. Very different from Dublin, I would have thought.
Well, very different. So, in fact, I mean, in the real life account, which is also how I tell it in the novel, Ernest Guinness, who's the father of the girls, he decided that it was getting too dangerous in Ireland. So in very early 1920s, he took them on a round-the-world yacht cruise to get away from Ireland. They went to Japan. They went all over the place. And then they pitched up in London in very early 1924, and they were launched into society. So they were launched into society at exactly the same moment that the bright young people, so, you know, these kind of party-loving creatures who we know from Evelyn Waugh and from the novels of Nancy Mitford, were beginning to break down the stuffy old barriers of the London season. And so the girls were presented as debutantes, and they did that very stuffy staid court ball thing. And then they began to get kind of charmed into this much more dynamic, exciting, glamorous life of the bright young people, their cocktails, their treasure hunts, their, you know, insane fancy dress parties, their trips through London, their jazz and cocktails.
The other thing I wanted to ask you just before we finish up, Emily, is actually the atmosphere of Glenmaroon, the house in Castleknock itself. Now, towards the end of the novel, we come back there in 1972. People can read the novel to find out why we're there in 1972. How alike is the Glenmaroon of today? Does it exist today? Is it like the Glenmaroon of the 1920s?
It does. No, I don't think so. Sadly, I have not seen it for myself. It does exist. After the Guinnesses, it became a care home. So a religious order took it over. And it was a care home for young women for, I think, 20 years, but I'm not 100% clear on that. And then at a certain stage, it was abandoned. It was left empty for a very long time. It was used as a film set. So I know people who've been in there. But then it was sold. And when I went looking for A, who bought it, and B, could I get a tour of it, I was not able to find an answer to either of those questions. I don't know who has it now, but it is still there. And maybe somebody will pop up now and offer me a chance to go and have a look, because I would love to.
Yeah, well, the atmosphere that you give us of the 20th century, early 20th century Glenmaroon is certainly very atmospheric indeed. And that is Emily Hurricane speaking to me there about her novel, The Glorious Guinness Girls. It is published by Hachette, and that is our lot for this Thursday evening here in Arena. Liam Murphy and Paula Shields research. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Mark McGrath was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Sinead Egan. Talk to you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on RTÉ Radio 1.